case for argument, United States versus Davis. Ms. Keese.
Good morning. May it please the court, Ms. Wesley. My name is Jean Keyes. I'm here as the CJA appointing counsel for Ms. Babette Davis. Ms. Davis's case is before the court for review today on sentencing issues. Briefly, in February of 2004, Ms. Davis and her then-girlfriend, Toya Olds, were indicted on tax fraud, a variety of counts. A guilty plea was entered in the case to count two on behalf of Ms. Davis. She entered that plea in April of 2004, and ultimately that conduct related to her own tax returns. The other counts were dismissed. And then a year passed because of the pendency of the Booker and the Fanfan decisions in the sentencing of this case. And at that point in time, after Booker and Fanfan were decided, in April of 2005 and May of 2005, Ms. Davis came to court and had a contested sentencing hearing. Today we are here for appeal on the issues of the enhancement for obstructing and also whether or not she was entitled credit for acceptance of responsibility. Just briefly, in the context of this whole proceeding, Ms. Davis had been out of custody from the get-go in this case. She had been summoned in, I believe, ultimately released on conditions of bond, done extremely well, had no violations during that year that she had been out of custody. Ultimately, the district court came to the determination on April 29th of 2005, sua sponte, without request from the government, without request from pretrial services, certainly not from a request from me, Your Honors, that she be taken into custody. It seemed that the court, without hearing her allocution, without determining the guideline provisions, and without, frankly, deciding that Ms. Davis was entitled to complete the hearing that she had started with the government on that date, that he would impose a sentence of imprisonment. Now, I submit
but
to
But he did give her a chance later to explain. I mean, judges, obviously, you know, as they listen to, as a case proceeds, they form a tentative opinion, right? And it gets revised as they learn more about the case.
That
so is there anything different here about that?
Sometimes, Your Honors, transcripts do not reveal the demeanor. They don't reveal only the words.
Well, there's nothing we can do about that, right?
I wish that we could. Frankly, Ms. Davis, I think, was denied her right allocution. The court merely said, you know what, I'm tired of this, I'm sick of this, and we're going to take you into custody. Now, the government has submitted that, in fact, this is just a mere review of bail. I think, and they've also said that this point is moot, but this point is not moot to Ms. Davis.
Yes, but look, it wouldn't be proper to deny bail to someone who didn't think she was going to get a prison sentence, right?
That is true.
So implicitly, when you deny someone bail, you're making a prediction that you're going to sentence the person, or someone's going to sentence the person to prison, so that they'll get, you know, credit for their jail time.
How
right? If you were planning to fine a person, it'd be ridiculous to deny. It would be pretty unlikely that you would deny bail to someone you were planning to fine, unless you thought the person wouldn't pay the fine, right?
That may be, and let's make the assumption that Ms. Davis was going to go to prison, and probably under the advisory guidelines, she would have gone to prison and did go to prison in this case. But the difference is, and the reason why this is so important, is he seemed to have made up his mind that that was the end-all and be-all, without considering the arguments of counsel, without considering her allocution. And the other thing that it did for her is that it denied her the opportunity to self-surrender, which in the Bureau of Prisons means a whole lot. That affected her security status, and ultimately her placement in an institution very far away from her family. So I think that that's the importance of that particular argument, Judge.
Well, that, yeah, as you point out, at least the guidelines are being advisory, but there was no chance, really, was there, she'd get probation?
No, and I submit to you that that probably was not going to happen. I think that that was unrealistic to expect that, and I don't believe that I expected that, nor did Ms. Davis expect that.
And what would you gain from this appeal?
Well, I think that she deserved to have the opportunity of a full sentencing hearing before being just summarily taken into custody for, frankly, he stated no reason at all other than he didn't like her demeanor on the day of the particular hearing. And I sat next to the woman. I'm not certain what the problem was because she really... I don't know. I couldn't observe that, what the problem was. But he just decided, hey, this is how it's going to be. And that was the end all and be all of the day. And it did deny her, though, the collateral right to self-surrender. I think more important issues, though, to Ms. Davis are the issues related to the application of the enhancements under the sentencing guidelines. And if it pleases the court, I'll move on to that. I submit to the court that the district court erred in finding that Ms. Davis obstructed judgment. And I think that the government has done a very good job in their brief of breaking it down. In the category A, that she made false pre-arrest statements to the IRS agent, Brandon Bilkey. To begin with, obstruction of justice does not apply to all conduct by a criminal defendant regarding false statements to law enforcement. If you look at U.S. Sentencing Guidelines Section 3C1.1, especially Note 5, it says in particular that there's a list of false statements that might not be grounds for the obstruction of justice enhancement, those being making false statements not under oath to law enforcement officers. And that's what happened here, in essence, if you believe that she made false statements at all. The statements that she made do not warrant the application of the enhancement. Perhaps they warrant the judge deciding to go on the higher end of the sentencing guideline range, but not the enhancement of obstruction. Ms. Davis's statements were made to the agent prior to charging, not under oath, not in the context of court proceedings. She perhaps could have been more candid, but the assertion that the IRS had to check out all of her claims, that Michael Wimpey or Lisa Leonard or Bro McAfee or any of these other cast of characters prepared some of these tax documents, wasn't sufficient to increase her sentence based upon obstruction of justice. The other category for the obstructing would be that she attempted to persuade unindicted co-conspirators to implicate Michael Wimpey or Miss T in this fraud scheme. The fact that she made a one-time sort of frantic statement, oh my God, I'm going to prison, I'm going to jail, and please tell everyone that you know that I didn't commit this crime, it was somebody else. It can be sort of looked at in this fashion, in that what happened when those people were approached by the IRS agents? When Dorothy Glenn, Damon Olds, and Shamila Clark were approached by the IRS, what did they say? They didn't take Ms. Davis seriously. They told the government that it was Ms. Davis who committed the crime. And I point out that although Damon Olds was subpoenaed to come to court to say that Ms. Davis requested this behavior on his behalf, he didn't show up, and Shamila Clark was not subpoenaed to the sentencing hearing so that she could be cross-examined on that. And there actually were other people that, in fact, said that Michael Wimpey was preparing tax returns.
But obstruction doesn't have to be effective in order to be punished.
Supposedly, yes, Your Honor, but it's, again, it's one of those things that can be punished by giving the defendant a higher end sentence in the guideline range rather than imposing the additional 2-point enhancement for obstruction of justice. The third and related argument would be that the district court erred in denying Ms. Davis acceptance of responsibility. It just appears on the record that the court based its decision solely on the finding that Ms. Davis obstructed justice, that she was not entitled to acceptance of responsibility. And I think that the court ignored a couple things. He ignored that she had entered a plea. He ignored her statement regarding acceptance of responsibility. There was a significant amount of work that went into that with Ms. Davis to get her to that point. And also, it was just an extraordinary effort on her behalf, and I think that she met her burden of proof by the preponderance of the evidence. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Kies. Ms. Wesley?
May it please the court. The defendant's sentence should be affirmed. There are four issues that counsel addressed, and I'll address all in turn. With regard to the defendant's remand, I don't believe that the court in any way intimated that any type of sentence was being imposed. Instead, I think that it's clear, although the district court did not explicitly cite to Section 3143, that the district court found that a sentence of imprisonment was appropriate for Ms. Davis, and therefore remand was appropriate. In counsel's reply brief, much is made of the fact that at a previous hearing, at the guilty plea hearing, that the defendant was not remanded. At the sentencing hearing, however, the district court was in a much different position. The court had the PSR. The court had also heard testimony from government witnesses, in particular testimony regarding the defendant's attempt to obstruct in this case. So remand was appropriate. And furthermore, as the record demonstrates, the defendant was afforded the opportunity to allocute and to have counsel argue on her behalf. With respect to the obstruction enhancement, I believe that the enhancement, of course, was appropriate based on the two grounds cited in my brief. First, the defendant made materially false statements prior to the case being charged, and second, she did attempt to influence witnesses. I just want to make some brief comments with regard to the defendant's attempt to influence witnesses. In my brief, I merely rely on the court's statements after sentence had been imposed. However, it's clear that during the course of the proceedings, the court did credit the testimony that the government offered. In particular, I would direct the court's attention to page 126 of the sentencing transcript. In particular, the district court was addressing the defendant's enhancement for role, and on page 196, he specifically indicates that, and I quote, "But also, there's testimony that she counseled people about what she could or what she should or should not say if they were approached by law enforcement." Additionally, on page 201, the district court specifically made comments regarding the applicability of the obstruction enhancement and indicated towards the middle of the page, line 14, and I quote, "I certainly don't have anything before me that suggests that the representations and testimony provided to the court during the course of this proceeding have been false." So the district court, during the course of the hearing, certainly credits the information regarding the defendant's attempts to influence witnesses in the case. And I believe the enhancement was appropriate. With regard to the pretrial statements made by the defendant, certainly law enforcement was misled, as evidenced by the testimony offered by Special Agent Bilkey. For over 4 months, the investigation continued, and Special Agent Bilkey was not certain who Ms. T was or Michael Wimpy was, and whether or not, in fact, Ms. Davis was the perpetrator of the scheme. Finally, with regard to acceptance of responsibility, despite what standard of review the court uses in determining whether or not acceptance was appropriate, clearly the enhancement for obstruction was proper, and therefore, under the guidelines and case law, denial of points of acceptance of responsibility was appropriate. Finally, the sentence was certainly reasonable. And based on the arguments in my brief as well as my comments here today, I would ask that the defendant's sentence be affirmed.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Wesley. Ms. Kies, how much time? 1 minute?
Thank you, Judge. If you look at the record in this case, the sentence was not reasonable because not only based upon the arguments that I've already previously made, but the district court did not make sufficient findings of fact in its sentencing to support Davis's sentence. If you look at the factors in 18 U.S.C. section 3553 sub A, the district court didn't articulate any of those factors in its sentencing. In fact, it just said, "I am mindful of those factors." Period. And district courts, I know, no longer have to examine each and every one of those.
What factor would you have stressed?
I would have stressed the fact that her health is not very good. I would have stressed the fact that my client has done some good things in her life. She was a foster parent. She took care of two children and was leading them in the right direction. I would have stressed the fact that she had a relatively minor criminal history that was basically almost 10 years old at the time of this conviction in this case. It was for one prior case. She had been the victim of domestic violence. There were lots of things that he could have relied upon in mitigation, Your Honor. I submit to you that he did not do that, and the sentencing was not adequate to support, the sufficient findings were not adequate to support the sentence. Thank you for listening.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Geisen. You were appointed, were you not?
Yes, I was, sir.
Well, we thank you for your vigorous efforts on behalf of your client.
Thank you.